From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 17th day of May, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett should join us from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois, to take a look at the cash grain situation and how things are going down on the farm. And then we'll take up the agricultural weather forecast as we close out our time together. Mike Tenera will be here from Storm Weather in Chicago. Along the way, we'll check in on the agricultural news too, right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. It's been a rough couple of weeks and kind of a down day for corn and soybeans. Tough week, actually, for soybeans, Dan. What do you think of the market action?
Well, the market's been on the defensive basically for a week since we last talked after the May crop report, supply-demand tables that were viewed as generally friendly toward commodities, corn and soybeans, and they were really unable to capitalize on that bullish news. And, you know, the market kind of closed unchanged to maybe slightly lower there a week ago. Since then, the market has been more in a corrective phase. We had a sharp down there on Friday following that weakness or that weak close there on Thursday on bullish news. And then it continued this week. Now, Tuesday, we had a nice day in corn. Had another good day yesterday. But we were headed, I think, in pretty good footing until today. I think today's weakness is kind of discouraging, at least to someone that wants to maybe be a little friendly to market, because we were kind of in a position to maybe close out the week with a weekly reversal to the upside. It was probably going to be more important in corn than probably soybeans, because corn did close last week with a reversal down. And if we could reversed that with a reversal to the upside this week, then that would have negated last week's reversal to the downside on corn. Generally speaking, there's really nothing real bullish to focus on. I think that's what the market is kind of telling us. Yes, we do have some weather issues here and there. But nothing to get too excited about. It's still early yet in the growing season. Probably the wheat market has the most concern with the dryness in the Southwest. It was able to kind of hold together so far today. Corn and soybeans, the crop is probably not technically all planted, but it does look, at least at the moment, the trade doesn't want to worry about losing any acres, at least from the March report. We've even had some private estimators kind of raising the number of planted acres of corn and soybeans yet before it's all over with. That's just their guess. We'll have to see what happens on June 30th. NAFTA doesn't look like it's going to get done in time. So some of the people are worried about that. We're still in negotiations with China over a new trade agreement, or at least some form of changes the way we do trade with China. So everything's kind of not necessarily negative, but we don't really have a bullish feature really at this time to give the market that punch. So that's one of the reasons why this past week has been mostly a consolidation to a corrective phase. Now, technically, we're right down at the bottom end of the sideways to higher channel that both December corn and November soybeans have been trading in. So it's real important from a technical position for the markets to kind of hold in here tomorrow and maybe kind of close out the week on a higher note. And that'll probably have a lot to say with maybe what the weather pattern looks like if the maps change over the weekend, and if the trade interprets them as being somewhat negative toward overall production in the United States. But we are down to some key support levels that need to hold. The market needs to rally off of these and then kind of resume the upward momentum that we've been into for several weeks.
About 2 minutes left. What do you think of the outside markets, the dollar and the Dow? Have you been watching either of them very closely? The dollar has come back quite a ways from its recent lows.
Yes, the dollar is probably one of the most negative features going on in the commodity complex, at least for right now. And it's being driven by higher interest rates. I mean, the 10-year bond hit 3% this week, this first time since 2011 or something like that. It's been several years since we've been this high. So that is giving support to the dollar. And then in turn, the dollar, supporting dollar, you know, makes commodity markets more defensive because it makes them more expensive in the world trade. The Dow, it's basically been in a consolidation sideways trading range for most of the year after we made our high early in the year. And then we had that big hard break to the downside during the middle part of the winter. And now we've been just kind of trading back and forth. The question on the Dow is, are we going to stay in a sideways trading pattern, depending upon how the economic news, fundamental news continues to be generally positive, or are we in the process of rolling over with higher interest rates becoming the big new thing to own? I think I mentioned to you some time ago, there's two generations of people out there that haven't really seen high interest rates like we have seen them in our lifetime. And it's going to be a big shock to them if interest rates would go back to what we saw when we bought our first car at 7% or 8% interest rates. People have been buying cars here at 1% or 2% interest rates. So that's something to kind of keep an eye on the economy, what that may or may not do to the stock market and the dollar.
Hey, thanks so much. We always like talking with you, and we'll look forward to having our conversation again next week.
Very well.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker with Zwicker Consulting of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with NAFTA and the spin from Washington, D.C. in the United States Department of Agriculture. Stephanie Ho has more with the Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue.
Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue acknowledged what he called legitimate anxiety over trade deals like NAFTA.
It looks not as optimistic regarding the NAFTA renewal right now as it did.
Why does he have this opinion?
I think it's more of a workload issue. We've got engaged with China over some trade issues. Yes. And I think Ambassador Lighthizer's had his hands full in various areas with EU and steel and aluminum tariffs.
He says the three sides, the United States, Canada, and Mexico, are close to a NAFTA deal in principle, but that time is running out.
It's getting short to where Congress could approve the Trade Promotion Authority of NAFTA. So we're not as optimistic as we once were, but I am long-term optimistic that NAFTA will be renewed and we will maintain those markets.
The Secretary's comments came in an interview with the Coloradoan newspaper in Fort Collins. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Well, let's stay with trade. Cargill is concerned that the United States and China trade discussions taking place in Washington, D.C. will not resolve any issues and that it could escalate into a trade war. In comments sent to the U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, Cargill officials say the tariffs proposed by the U.S. targeting China will not effectively advance the goal of addressing distortive trade practices. This according to Reuters. Cargill sent a 5-page letter to Lighthizer as the USTR is taking comment and hearing testimony this week on proposed tariffs. For Cargill and other grain trade organizations, the growing trade disputes are disrupting agricultural supply chains. A Cargill official writes in the letter that U.S. farmers will be hurt the most by declining prices linked to China's retaliatory efforts, including a 25% tariff on U.S. soybeans. Cargill states the use of tariffs is unsuccessful in achieving lasting solutions. The hearings this week come as officials from China and the United States are holding meetings in Washington, D.C., to discuss trade. From trade, we'll stay in Washington, D.C., but switch issues to the Farm Bill. The opening shots were fired yesterday in the U.S. House over the House GOP's 2018 bill that Republicans hoped to squeak through on a straight party line vote. No surprises on this one. The fireworks started immediately as House Ag and Rules Committee Democrat James McGovern called the Farm Bill disgusting and sought unsuccessfully to block even debate on it.
This Farm Bill is a bad policy, plain and simple. It's not thought out. It is a bunch of unfunded mandates. It is a disaster. It is bad for the millions of working families, children, older adults, and other vulnerable Americans who will be kicked off of SNAP or see their benefits reduced. It's bad for farmers and ranchers who are already suffering from low prices.
Rules Committee Republican Rob Woodall of Georgia refuted McGovern's charge that states will have an unfunded mandate to train able-bodied adult SNAP recipients.
At a time when we have the lowest unemployment rate in my lifetime, at a time when we have more jobs available to be filled in America than ever before in American history, whether it's a burden to say if you want to receive a federal benefit, that being food stamps, that you should try to find a job first.
Debate continues for the rest of the week on the Farm Bill and numerous amendments, including contested riders that would impact the sugar program, crop insurance subsidies, and impose new payment limits on farm managers. GOP votes were still in question for Friday passage. The Senate Ag Committee, meantime, could start writing its Farm Bill. That prompted reporters to ask Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue what happens if the bill's not done in time. That means by the time the 2014 bill expires on September the 30th.
Then usually we'll extend the current Farm Bill for another year, continue to debate and negotiate over the provisions of the Farm Bill. That creates a lot of problems, obviously, administratively with USDA and the Farm Service Agency, but it also creates more problems for farmers that don't have a consistent planning mechanism for the years going forward.
President Trump is said to be considering to veto a farm bill that lacks new GOP SNAP work requirements. A more bipartisan Senate farm bill is not expected to include that to avoid a Democratic filibuster. And finally today, something completely different. In April, the Equipment Dealers Association and the Association of Equipment Manufacturers surveyed their members about the impact of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and steel and aluminum tariffs on their businesses. Dealers and manufacturers were in consensus that the two most beneficial provisions of the tax legislation were the lower corporate tax rate and the favorable expensing provisions for new and used equipment. While dealers and manufacturers are singing the same tune concerning tax cuts, there were substantial differences in their opinions related to recent trade tariffs imposed by the Trump administration on steel and aluminum. One surprising discrepancy, according to survey organizers, was the opinion on how the tariffs would impact the U.S. economy. Although many say they believe the tariffs will negatively impact the U.S. economy, only 45% of dealers said the tariffs would negatively impact the economy as compared to 62% of manufacturers, who said the same. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds from Windsor, Illinois, now joins us to take up the cash grain market. Hey, Matt, thanks for being with us. Did you get any rainfall in the past week there in your farm?
No, actually, we didn't get any rain at all. We were in Mattoon the other night, and they probably had 3 or 4 inches of rain in less than an hour. It was an absolute flood. I got home, and we hadn't had a raindrop. So, 10, 12 miles away, from where they'd had that kind of rain. So it was definitely very spotty, but we didn't get anything in the last week. Our crops look pretty darn good, but, you know, a lot of folks were hoping to get a little shower because the ground had got kind of hard on them and some beans were having a hard time emerging.
Speaking of soybeans, kind of a tough week for them, though today not nearly so bad. What have you made of it? Made of this volatility so far?
Well, you know, the last couple weeks really haven't been that great for the bean market. You know, obviously we've had some a little bit of pressure at times. I mean, you look at November beans, they're kind of clinging on for dear life with this $10 level. And I think that in the grand scheme of things, the trade's just very concerned, I think, about some of the trade situations, whether it be NAFTA or China, more so for soybeans, obviously the Chinese situation. But in the grand scheme of things, once again, as I've always said, China's going to have to buy a lot of soybeans. And from a world perspective, the world carry is not growing. And so that to me is at least supportive.
What'd you think of USDA's May supply and demand report numbers and the table for new crop, both corn and soybeans?
Well, you know, for new crop corn, I would say there's probably been reports in the past where that kind of a number at 159 would have propelled the market to limit up moves. I mean, that was a very friendly number from a world vantage point, going from last year at 229, you know, to next year's number at 159. I mean, a 70 million metric ton drop is just outlandish, 33% or so. So obviously that's fairly friendly, you know, world vantage point for soybeans as well. It's friendly. It's not that it's overly bullish by any means, but it's at least supportive. You know, we're not building world stocks. And then part of that is due to absolute crazy amount of demand, you know, even though the supply just continues to roll in.
And of today's trade, what was the most important thing in your mind?
I still think, you know, today's trade, you're just awfully worried about trade issues. There's a little bit of a spookiness in the market. I think the corn market yesterday wanted to rally. Today, it was trying to rally right off the bat and hold itself intact. But eventually, there's just been a lot of soybean weakness of late that's weighed heavily on the market. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're looking at corn down 3 or 4 and beans down 7+ cents again. So I just think that it's having a hard time finding buyers at the present time.
And in part because Washington, D.C. is having a tough time nailing down NAFTA and Chinese negotiations?
Yeah, absolutely. That's I think, the biggest factor on a day like today that otherwise was fairly quiet from a news perspective. So, yeah, I think that whenever you look at the corn market, especially, we have to keep in mind, though, without a big increase in acreage, this market is likely to be very well supported. Any sort of weather situation on a widespread basis is going to be very heavily met with a lot of buying. At this stage of the game, a lot of producers in northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, southern Michigan, these producers are telling me, South Dakota, that they're 10, 20, 30% done on corn. They're concerned. They're still wet in some of these areas. And so if we lose any acreage, by all means, this market's going to be pretty dynamic with any weather this summer.
Matt, thanks so much.
Yep, thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He is with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Mike Tenura is now here from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, let's get started. In the northwestern Corn Belt, rainfall there, I think, is already beginning, and they may not need it exactly.
They could use a little bit of rain in the spring wheat belt, but the problem is that as it rains, it slows down spring wheat planting and corn planting. This is all beginning today in North Dakota and Minnesota, and it extends into Nebraska, South Dakota, and eventually some of these wet areas of southern Minnesota and northern Iowa by the time we get into Saturday afternoon and more so Saturday night. So a planting window is opening, but it's also going to close here within a few days.
And then if we think about the rest of the Corn Belt, what I'm hearing from producers is that they believe it to be dry, though what I'm also hearing from the state statisticians in their weekly reports for crop progress, the audio, is that subsoil and topsoil moisture isn't in bad condition yet.
Well, we're seeing that in our data as well. If you look at rainfall over the last 30 days and weight it by U.S. corn and soybean production, you'll come to the conclusion that the current period of rainfall is actually the driest in May for U.S. corn and soybeans since any date going back to 2012 in the month of May. So that tells us that the coverage of 30-day dryness right now is actually higher than it was at the onset of the drought in 2012. But before you get too excited, this explains why you're seeing some mixed conditions or mixed interpretations of what's happening. If you look at rainfall over the last 90 days, which is a better indicator of long-term drought, we don't see anything alarming. The coverage of 90-day dryness on U.S. corn only includes about 11% of production. In 2012 on this date, it included 24% of production, and it marched on higher right into August. So we need a lot of things to happen here for it to start become alarming. And we do have rain in the forecast over the next 1 to 2 weeks. If those rains were to fail, then we might have some more to talk about.
And one other item I think that might be of interest. We know that April was one of the coldest on record. However, it seems that May has been really warm.
You're absolutely right. May is very likely going to rank as number 9 warmest since 1895. And that follows the number 2 coldest April since 1895. The differential between April and May will smash every record going back 124 years. So this is unprecedented what we're going through, transitioning from that very cold April to this very warm May. The interesting thing is that if we look at some of these other years that have these real big transitions, if we take the 25 largest transitions between April and May temperatures, we don't see a whole lot for July and August. We don't have a clear deviation to the cool, warm, dry, or wet side in the key summer period for corn and soybeans. The same thing is true when you isolate out the very coldest of Aprils. There's not much clue there as to what might come up later on in the summer. The only thing that is interesting is that if you look at the very warmest of Mays, and again, this will rank among the very warmest of Mays, for the most part, you see the same thing. There's just not a clear deviation to the cool, dry, wet, or warm side. But here's the one thing that's interesting. Of the worst growing seasons that we know of, going all the way back to the 1890s, 6 of those very bad ones did follow the warmest Mays. That was in 1934, 1936, 1955, 1988, 1991, and 2012. So this just tells us that even though we don't have a very good clue as to what's going to happen this summer, the risk is not reduced. If anything, the risk is the same as always, maybe even a little bit higher going forward.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us.
Always great being here, Todd.
That, of course, is Mike Tenuri. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago.